This is Dr. Jessica Floyd reading her paper, Shaping a Hyper-Masculine Sailing Identity, Sex, Violence, and Otherness in Examples of Blow the Man Down, located in the James Madison Carpenter Collection. The labor required of the early modern sailor was grueling and dangerous. Imagine as sailors pushed collectively against the enormous capstan, pulled with all of their collective might at ropes, or heaved with breath and body working simultaneously all against the backdrop of a dark and unforgiving open sea. Such heavy, concentrated, collective, and often lengthy work would necessitate some tool through which sailing men could orchestrate their movements, pass the time, entertain them, and ease some of the strain. For the sailor, his shanty, or work song of the sea, was one of the modes through which he succeeded in coordinating multiple bodies, breaths, and efforts into constrained movements that help to complete the work of the ship. These songs do not only, however, facilitate the work of the sailing ship. In fact, they are artifacts rich with narratives that permit space to contemplate the elements sailors chose to include in their songs in order to spur on the work of the ship. Shanties often capture narratives of women, ship life, danger, and homegoing, and within these narratives, scholars are able to excavate some of the social mores and ideas that were integral parts of the sailing world. How the sailor navigated his own personhood and construction of masculine identity is certainly foremost in the analytical possibilities available to the scholar. One of the most prolific shanties in circulation is the song Blow the Man Down. In fact, Frederick Pease Harlow, in his collection of shanties and sailor songs titled Shanting Aboard American Ships, mentions that, quote, it, Blow the Man Down, has been sung so often that the words are legion, unquote. Examples of the song exist in almost every collection of shanties, and there are several main narrative themes that are apparent throughout the collected materials. Shanty collector Stan Hugel outlines in his shanties from the Seven Seas that there are at least, quote, six major versions of Blow the Man Down, and are, quote, the flash packet from Radcliffe Highway as version A, the sailing of the black baller as version B, the flying fish sailor or policeman version as version C, the fishes as version D, the milkmaid as version E, and Bungeri as version F, end quote. Each of these versions are unique and most share only the common line Blow the Man Down. Some versions have a different refrain, however, all contain at least the notion of blowing someone or something down. The focus of this presentation is on one collection containing multiple examples of Blow the Man Down. It may, in fact, be one of the few collections that boasts such a great number of collected examples. Within the James Madison Carpenter Collection, housed in the Library of Congress, there are over 106 collected examples of Blow the Man Down, from various informants and in multiple formats. This striking number of collected variations, housed in the same space, provides the opportunity to consider many narratives of the song alongside one another. What an analysis of the narratives located in this collection reveals is that, at least in terms of the songs in the James Madison Carpenter Collection, Blow the Man Down reproduces a working-class male identity structure where the bodies of women are at the service of the singing men. What is interesting about this collection of examples, however, is that the songs also relate the slippery quality of that identity construction, and how within the confines of the sailing ship, what is expected of the masculine sailor is often thwarted by experiences and situations wholly outside of his control, rendering the identity construction almost impossible to fully and faithfully reproduce. Pointedly, what readers encounter in the Carpenter Collection are narratives that speak to the subordinated and controlled lives of sailing men, usually reinforced through violence, which ultimately work to place masculine-presenting men in positions that are emasculating. This posturing is clearly opposite to the hyper-masculine construction expected. What the narratives accomplish is, foremost, an opportunity for sailors to not only express the experience of living with this violence and daily subordination, but also a means through which to mitigate the feeling of helplessness. They succeed in assuaging their sense of living in emasculating circumstances through subordinating other figures in the shanty narratives, namely women. What is interesting about the narratives, however, is that in trying to reclaim masculine dominance through subordinating women, the sailing men juxtapose such tales with pointing to the violence they likely encountered on a daily basis. What I argue the collective narratives of Blow the Man Down suggest is a general sentiment of masculine futility, the sailor's attempt to mitigate through dominating a figure marked as other, but that in those pursuits of dominance, their ultimate subordinated status is further reinforced, or at least functions always and already at the periphery. Though sailing men identify a need to reproduce a particular notion of masculinity, they are continuously frustrated in those attempts. I read these patterns as sailing men recognizing how impossible it actually is to regain a sense of masculine authority and position, considering their confinement to ship, a space noted within the songs as not only different from land, but also a space in which men lose their virility and their youth. I want to begin by outlining the subordinated position that sailors held on the sailing ship, usually reinforced by savage and capricious punishments wielded by those holding higher positions within the hierarchy. The sailor was daily at the mercy of captains and mates, and many historians have remarked that the sailing ship was a space that brought with it a unique structure of punishment and control, markedly different from the land-bound world. Sailing life and corporeal punishment went hand in hand. Ship discipline in the 18th and 19th centuries was its own torturous and brutal entity, and because sailors could not fight back with fists, necessarily, I argue that song is likely where this frustration was vented. Richard Henry Dana Jr., during his voyage on the Pilgrim, describes a scene of punishment and domination that is representative of the types of violence enacted on ship in the age of sail. The example also helps to highlight the imbalance of power and savagery of abuse suffered by sailing men that is likely reflected in lines like the refrain of Blow the Man Down. Dana describes a vicious scene of flogging, but also remarks on how the captain relished the moment and the savagery. He writes, quote, "He began laying the blows upon his, the sailor's back, swinging half round between each blow to give it full effect. As he went on, his passion increased, and he danced about the deck, calling out as he swung the rope, 'If you want to know what I flog you for, I'll tell you. It's because I like to do it. Because I like to do it, it suits me. That what I do it for. Don't call on Jesus Christ,' shouted the captain. 'He can't help you. Call on Captain T. He's the man. He can help you. Jesus Christ can't help you now.'" End quote. Clearly in the example excerpted from Dana's memoir, the sailor is exposed and fiercely beaten for the pleasure of the captain, who admits that he will do with his sailors as he chooses. The captain also raises himself, in Dana's description, to a space level with Jesus, claiming that he is the only savior who can absolve the prone sailor. Though beatings perpetrated by higher-ranking sailors on the backs of sailing men are not directly mentioned examples of Blow the Man Down, instances of violence in general are key to the narrative. Generally, all examples of Blow the Man Down in the Carpenter Collection and others contain the refrain, "Blow the Man Down," which carries with it an element of the violence that sailors experienced in their daily lives. The word blowing should be understood as receiving or delivering a punch, and with singing that line after every stanza, it is possible to read the repetition as continued and sustained violence within the song, much like the experiences of many sailing men. In fact, Dana is one of the many sailing writers who discuss the level of violence inherent in their shipboard lives, and the short excerpt from Before the Mast is roughly similar to other accounts of the violences endured by sailing men. The scenarios, such as the one described by Dana, clearly registered within the refrain of Blow the Man Down, helps to articulate the hierarchical nature of shipboard life and underscores how the masculine-presenting sailor is often daily thwarted in his attempts to posture a hyper-masculine persona. Though sailing men likely sought to express expected masculine identity constructions, such as control and dominance, a sailor's treatment on ship often undermined those attempts and, instead, reinforced a subservient position where sailing men were essentially feminized and subordinated to the assaults of mates and captains. More specifically, it is not only within the refrain of the song where this violent undertone is expressed. Several versions of Blow the Man Down in the Carpenter Collection also contain narrative elements that lend further support to the hierarchical nature of shipboard work that ultimately emasculates sailing men and finds its way back into song. For instance, in the Black Ball Shanty number 335, the sailor sings, quote, "I'll help you along with the toe of my boot," end quote, which suggests that the sailor will be aided in his shipboard duties through the application of a swift and violent kick distributed by the mate or the man in charge. In a similar vein, The example of Blow the Man Down, titled The Ship Neptune, given by informant L. Vernon Briggs and numbered 339. The sailor sings, quote, "Oh, along comes the mate with his big sea boots on. If you don't be aware, he'll light you along," end quote. In both of these examples, the sailor is kicked by another man, likely a mate, in the interest of keeping the sailing ship running as expected. The act of kicking or blowing a person down would likely be doled with such force that the man on the receiving end would be knocked back or forward, perhaps even to the ground. In this posture, whether on the ground or knocked off of his feet, the sailing man would be relegated to a visual space lower than the man who blew him down. The addition of narrative elements that point to a higher-ranking man kicking and alighting a sailing man produces images that are ultimately juxtaposed to the ones in which a sailor is in total sexual control of a woman. What is striking about the examples of Blow the Man Down in the Carpenter collection is the fact that the consistent refrain of blowing or kicking and striking bookend stanzas of narrative that usually relay a sailor's sexual exploits in port, often wherein the woman is controlled by the main sailing character. I contend that one reading of this juxtaposition of narratives, subordination at the hands of mates against narratives of control of women, could stem from a sailor's desire to articulate how the beatings he suffered often took on a sexual undertone. In this respect, the sexual narratives wherein the sailor attempted to maintain control in the sexual economy represent spaces in which the sailor channeled his frustrations from encounters on the sailing ship into the narrative choices within songs. In fact, there is at least one example of shipboard discipline in which a sailing man is not only clearly subordinated, but the subordination takes on a sexual tone, which places the beaten man in a sexually vulnerable position to the higher-ranking sailor. Mariner Ashley Bowen describes in his memoir how, quote, "So my master thought to make me as great an example as possible, and he ordered me to be lashed by my two thumbs and to hang across the rig rope of our awning without trousers or breeches," end quote. Here, Bowen became an object whose punishment was sexualized through the lack of clothing, the pleasure the sadistic captain received, and the focus on his exposed buttocks that were placed on display for fellow sailors, and, arguably, was the chief focus of his master. In this humiliated and subordinated position, Bowen might be viewed as duly subordinated through both his posture and his receipt of the beating at the hands of the mate. In this particular posture, Bowen represents the antithesis of dominant ideals of masculine performance, a frustration that is certainly registered in examples of Blow the Man Down in the Carpenter collection, where the sailor attempts to sexually dominate the body of a woman. A second reading of this juxtaposition of narratives is that the addition of a hierarchical opposite-sex sexual relationship within the song versions permits space for the sailor to attempt to reclaim masculine authority through dominating the body of a woman. Stephen Arxer argues that, quote, "A central goal of hegemonic masculinity is the maintenance of control, and the expression of feelings and vulnerabilities is thought to undermine a sense of self-control," end quote. In terms of the violence that occurs, sometimes daily, within the space of the sailing ship, like what is represented in the excerpt from Dana and Bowen's memoirs, sailors would find themselves subordinated to the abuses of the captain and the mate, which stands in opposite position to the masculine expectation of control and dominance. Because of the hierarchy inherent within the sailing ship, the sailors were not capable of fighting back against the abuses perpetrated by higher-ranking shipmates, which placed them in a position where they were relatively helpless and had to take whatever was given to them. Based on what Arxer argues, sailing men would be expected to retaliate an aggression in order to preserve their sense of masculinity, as something like a kick or a blow would affront their facade of masculine control and would possibly place them in a vulnerable and subordinated position, possibly rendered feminized or sexualized. As they are constrained within the hierarchy, they did not have access to a direct retaliation that would help to re-secure their construction of masculine identity. In order to do that, they relied on transferring their aggressions onto the body of a surrogate. The most readily available surrogate would be the body of a woman within a shanty. In fact, I suggest that the shanty might be viewed as what James C. Scott denotes as hidden transcripts. He argues that, quote, "forms of oppression, as we shall see, deny subordinates the ordinary luxury of negative reciprocity, trading a slap for a slap and insult for an insult," end quote. Instead, the hidden transcript allows for subordinated individuals to, perhaps, not only articulate the power structure, but also to critique it. The victim in Blow the Man Down becomes the woman. Masculine control within examples of Blow the Man Down in the Carpenter collection often involve a sailor controlling a woman in the sexual encounter, creating a gender dichotomy where women are expected to follow the directions and dictates of the sailor. For example, informant Daniel Mullins provides an example of Blow the Man Down where a sailor sings, "I clued up her courses, legansail and all, and then she laid hold of gun tackle fall." In another example provided by informant G. Douglas, the sailor sings, "She backed her main topsail and fur him hove to." In each of these examples, the woman is at the command of the sailing man and submits to his desires alone. In fact, in the example from Mullins, the sailor is the one who draws up the woman's skirt in order to begin the process of intercourse. In this example, the woman does succeed in grasping hold of his penis, laid hold of gun tackle fall. However, the gesture is in service to the sailor's desires and not necessarily for her own pleasure. Just as the lived reality of sailors was such that they were almost continuously subordinated, the examples of Blow the Man Down in the Carpenter collection seem to capture the push and pull of attempting masculine control against the backdrop of the constrained space of the sailing ship. That constrained space ultimately emasculates the sailing men involved, and I would argue negates the hyper-masculine, male-centric sexual narratives of the examples discussed. Some of this failing of masculine control is echoed within the narratives of examples located in the Carpenter collection. Within an example provided by singer Robert Yeaman, there is a narrative suggestion of a sailor losing control in the masculine sexual economy when the sailors would sing, quote, "So we had a drink, maybe two, three, or four. When I awoke, I was stretched on the floor," end quote. In other examples of this song, the woman often steals money or clothing from the incapacitated sailor. The example from Yeaman hints at a loss of control where the sailor succumbs to the amount of alcohol he drinks, and he wakes not knowing what happened as the night passed on. The understood reading here is that the female character was likely in more control than the sailor. Losing control, especially in an exchange with a woman, negates any masculine posturing that occurred earlier in the song and supports the interpretation that some examples of Blow the Man Down more fully articulate the complex nature of shipboard gender construction and expression of hierarchy. While sailing men attempted to posture masculine ideals of control, strength, dominance, and virility, they were often frustrated in those attempts by things that were wholly out of their control. Though there are other narrative elements inherent in examples of Blow the Man Down from the Carpenter collection, such as sailing men's love of alcohol and the troubles that come with it, the juxtaposition of violence and sexual control brings with it the reading that these particular versions of the song register a pronounced maritime conflict. While sailing men were expected to reproduce gender norms associated with masculine working class men, they were, in many ways, constrained by the environment in which they daily toiled. The hierarchy of the sailing ship and the violent subordination doled out to the sailing men created a space that would necessitate something like a release valve for the continued failing of masculine posturing. I contend that the bodies of women within the examples located in the Carpenter collection serve as a conduit through which sailing men attempted to assuage their subordinated positions and regain some level of hegemonic masculine identity construction. What the narratives also detail, however, is the fact that even in those attempts at regaining control, sailing men were constantly at the mercy of the mate and the captain of the ship, as represented through the instances in which sailing men fail in the sexual economy they attempted to narratively control. Though the narratives often cast the men in control, the songs were deployed within the confines of the work of the ship, which was under the direction of higher-ranking men, which ultimately rendered the work accomplished within the songs almost meaningless. As well, the instances in which the sailing men are duped by women or lose a sense of control in the sexual economy align with the lived reality of life at sea, underscoring the relative subservience of the men in their daily lives. The refrain of Blow the Man Down and the several examples of songs that contain narrative violence help to articulate the nature of life for deep-water sailors and emphasize how ineffectual the sexualized narratives truly were at base.